Radio McGill Montreal. Nice is every time. Play the road of music. It's a ball. Bunch of Anton says so. World of people call. All the Radio McGill in Montreal can read on CKUT. Reggae music for you and me. No color barrier.
If your last vaccination against COVID-19 was more than 5 months ago, it's time to get another dose. Boosting your antibodies reduces the risk of getting or transmitting the virus. And booster doses help reduce the number of hospitalizations and deaths related to COVID-19. For better protection against the virus, book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID vaccine and follow the recommended vaccination schedule. Vaccination against COVID-19, a good way of extending our protection. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Hey, all you hip-hop heads. NDG's favorite urban music festival is back. Prévention Côté Neige NDG and Elementality are proud to present the 18th edition of Hip Hop You Don't Stop, ending the summer on a high note with a weekend full of performances, art showcases, dance battles, and community gathering. Featured artists include Mackie Lavender, Miriam Sassy, Remy Picasso, Shades Lawrence, DJ Pro V, and more. It's all going down Friday, September 16th to Sunday, September 18th, and it's all free. Visit linktree.com/HHYDS Montreal for more information and stay connected, because hip-hop doesn't stop here. Hip-Hop You Don't Stop is brought to you with the support of Canadian Heritage and La Ville de Montréal, a CKUT co-presentation.
You count it backwards so I don't. All I leave alone is song. Back away, back away, back away. So heads bow low and show me the love in my cries. Oh, shall I? You sound as candlelight, Marie. All that leaves can only charm her, they say. Shall I? You can affect this heart, how not golden I know. Can I see a light? Hello, shall I? Hello, and why? As the lonely open wide and cast love about, say hello, how, and hey. You are exactly one. So
yeah. Welcome to CQT, Eric Chenot, guitarist, songwriter, improviser, sound artist, film composer. thanks for joining us. I just want to start off by asking you about your new record, and maybe just if you could describe how you feel about this new record called Say Laura.
Well, hello, Alex, and hello, CKUT listeners. How do I feel about it? Well, I feel pretty good about it.
It's out 3-4 months now, I would say.
Since March, so I think
a bit more than that.
February, March, mm-hmm. March, April, May, June, July. No, it's been 6 months, probably 5 months. I don't know. How I feel about it right now is that I, even after having played it for a year, that material for a year before recording it live, and having played it quite a bit since, that I still have an immense amount of joy playing that music. So that must say something about, you know, how I feel about the record, that it's the material from it seems to mutate along with me quite well, and I'm still finding areas to improvise within it. And that is, well, it's not completely rare, but I would say that this music has maybe more legs on it than previous records. It still feels really new to me, and that is a pretty sweet predicament to be in.
Yeah, if the records don't feel stale after a while, then that's
no, not at all.
Yeah,
exactly.
I want to ask about how you sort of transform these things live. So
yeah,
I've never seen. Well, I've seen you play live, but never in this context of, you know, songs. So you play a lot of electronics on the record. Obviously, there's Ryan Driver on the Wurlitzer organ.
That's correct.
When you play it live, is it just stripped down? Does Ryan come and play?
It isn't really stripped down, especially, I mean, on previous records, I did a lot of guitar overdubbing.
Uh-huh.
So there's usually two guitars on every track. But Ryan actually only plays on two songs on the mm-hmm. new newest record. The next one, he will play on every song.
Mm-hmm.
But
and he was on the last one, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, exactly. You know, on one song on the last one.
Mm-hmm.
So he's progressively taking over. Soon it'll just be him. I won't even be involved at all.
Yeah, it'll be Ryan Driver plays the songs of Eric
exactly.
Shino without Eric.
That's a dream, actually. That's a beautiful dream of mine. It's not that stripped down because all of the electronics kind of stem from my guitar.
Mm-hmm.
The beats and rhythms and harmonies that create the kind of foundation of a lot of the rhythmic patterns of the song all happen live
mm-hmm.
through a series of different kind of electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And none of it is loops or anything pre-recorded. So it's actually not that stripped down. I mean, it might get stripped down just due to the way that I'm improvising within it, looking for space in different ways each time I play. But yes, it does lack the Wurlitzer on all of the songs. It does not have that. But no, it's still pretty grooving, and yeah, it's not. I don't think it's that different. Actually,
the big juicy bass lines say that on "Hello, How" and "Hey."
Yeah,
those are generated. So those are things that are generated from the guitar.
That's correct. It's maybe more. It's not that. It's just for any electronic wizards out there. It's just a series of noise gates.
Mm-hmm.
That are kind of create kind of loping rhythms
mm-hmm.
that I can almost mildly control, but they're all being played live.
Wow, that's amazing.
So it's just a lot of footwork.
Yeah.
But it's actually pretty fluid. I mean, I don't feel like an air traffic controller or anything. It's not a nerd out session. I mean, I feel pretty free and wild when I'm playing live. I would think that I say that the only difference is that because of the restrictions of vinyl, the songs on the records are too short for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I even kind of had to mathematically figure out the like down to like 10 seconds how long I could make each song so that it would fit on vinyl. And live, I don't have those. So like, you know, I've in the last couple months, a lot of my concerts have been like 5 songs and it's an hour and 40 minutes long.
Wow.
I don't know if it'll be that case on Saturday, but it depends on the vibe.
Yeah. Do you, you know, thinking about the limitation of the format, the LP format.
Yeah.
Would you consider a double LP, or are you interested in the possibilities of just digital music for that reason, that you can just really let loose?
That part of it has a lot to do with my relationship with Constellation.
Yeah.
So, we've never talked about a double. I know that it costs, I mean,
it costs double.
It's a lot to ask.
Yeah, of course.
And I, you know, prefer to ask as little as possible.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure they appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they appreciate that.
Yeah, I hope so. Not I mean, being you too know, demanding but as I mean, artist. I appreciate it's a, yeah, there's a lot of appreciation, I imagine,
yeah,
on both ends.
Absolutely.
But I mean, it's true. But I like constraints, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
I like fitting formats, and live is a whole different format that you get to explore. And you know, I think stripped down, more to the point versions of songs is also something that I'm interested in too, as a listener, for sure. Because it's one thing. Live, you can stretch out because it's a very direct situation. Everything makes sense. If you're in the room with the people who are present, you're sharing a kind of, there is a kind of shared experience of time and space. And that is impossible to really curate on a record,
mm-hmm.
because people are listening to it in a lot of different ways. So when you're playing live, you're sharing that space and that, you know, version of time. So you, in some ways, the length and the ways that things get stretched out is comes as much from the audience as it does from me. It's not just the songs get stretched out in the space between me and the audience, I would say. And a record, it's very difficult to, you can't really fake that. I mean, I guess a live record is possible, but I have a hard time listening to live recordings of myself for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. We have a host here on the station, does a show called Stereophobic, and obviously often does what he calls dream concerts, where he just plays 2 hours of live recordings, kind of sews them together, various bands bleeding into other bands, you know, as if it were kind of one continuous live concert.
Nice.
Kind of interesting way of doing it. But back, I just, do you, how to put this, when you, do you write songs and then find arrangements and then play them and then record them?
Yeah, almost always. I mean, actually, it's relatively conceptual at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I sing melodies into my phone
mm-hmm.
all the time, and then I forget about them. And then I notate them, and then I try to find chords for them at some point. The chords change the melody. I find lyrics, which then change the melody even more. And then I go, then the song's done. The bones of the song are done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and all of that is done, like, with my electric guitar not plugged in. Like I don't really work on arrangements at the same time that I'm writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just start playing them, and then I play them live, and that changes them even more. And basically, it's kind of the opposite of learning them. It's kind of learning how to deform them and to forget about the composition itself and all the things that the writer version of myself, the composer, thinks is important, I try to forget. And so it's mildly schizophrenic in a way,
mm-hmm.
because it's a kind of way of through time, letting time deconstruct what is really just needed, just enough in the song to keep it going, and then letting everything else go so that improvisation can happen.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So I want to talk about, I'm jumping around my questions here.
Okay.
I want to talk about ballads for a sec.
Me too.
Yeah. It's time for bad ballad talk. Yeah. I wanted to know how you, I was thinking in preparation for this interview, I was thinking about ballads and
mm-hmm.
I was, you know, I just call things a ballad, but do you, mm-hmm. what would you, if someone like that just showed up from, you know, the alien showed up and they asked you to explain what a ballad was, how would you describe it to them?
That's too good a question for me to be able to answer, really. It means so many things. I mean, I guess one way is to think about the word in French and its double meaning of un balade.
Yeah.
And which means a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And a certain kind of song, I guess usually somewhat reflective in nature. Not a dance tune,
mm-hmm.
Although, you know, that those boundaries can be slurred. You know, in terms of music, I really think of it in two different forms. I mean, there's the jazz ballad, which obviously has an immense place in my practice. I still think of what I do as writing kind of fake jazz ballads and then kind of beating the living crap out of them until they kind of lose some of that aspect. But then there are lots of other ballad forms, folk, traditional music ballad forms that are different. I kind of think of a ballad as a song that kind of... that does, in fact, take a walk. Like it moves, and along a line, which is the melody and the lyrics, and one that can be extended, either with or without improvisation. But I don't know if I can do better than that, right?
No, well, that's great. And I realized when I asked you that it's actually a tough question.
It's a beautiful word.
It really is.
And I think of everything that I've written in the last 25 years as a ballad. And whether it is one or not to a musicologist or not, I can't speak to that. But it does frame a kind of reflective space for me that I enjoy in a lot of different musics.
And I don't know if it's like this in France where you're, I was about to say where you're stationed, where you're living.
I am stationed.
but here in Quebec, podcasts are referred to as balado.
Really?
Yeah. Because baladeur is walkman.
Amazing.
An old term, but Walkman also, you know, you take it for a walk.
Amazing.
I read on, so moving on from ballads, if that's okay.
Yeah,
I read on your, I was reading your press release and I was surprised to see Listed as an influence, a favorite group of mine, which is EPMD. And I just wondered, how do you get EPMD into ballads? Eric and Parrish, or Making Dollars, or whatever it stands
in
for.
late 80s, early 90s. I mean, even before that, I remember being in Washington, D.C. to visit my aunt, and it was the time where Eddie Murphy's, I think it was Delirious, came out, and I wanted to buy the cassette. And so she told me, I was at her office where she worked, I think, and she's like, okay, you can go down this street, and she let me wander around downtown Washington with me and my younger brother, and we went into this record store, and I wanted to buy the Delirious cassette, and there was an in-store concert, and so I bought the cassette, and the guy's like, are you going to stay for the concert? And I'm like, well, what is it? And they're like, it's the Fat Boys. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. I grew up in the suburbs. I don't know how old I was when Delirious came out, but I was pretty young. And so we stayed. And I was just like, what in the fuck is this? What am I hearing? And at that moment became a quite heavy interest in hip-hop.
Yeah.
And and also a little later on, dancehall reggae. One kind of stems from the other.
Yeah.
But it is that period of hip hop for me, that amazing period between like 1994 maybe, with Gangstar, EPMD, all the early Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, kind of what I would call bouncy hip hop.
Yeah. And
like before they started putting in a lot of choruses and a lot of singing, and it was just flow all the way.
Yeah.
You know, people like Sizzla.
Yeah.
I mean, if he had a lyric sheet, it would be pages and pages, pages long. And I don't think it was really, I mean, when I was playing in a post-punk band, that music was most definitely part of what we were thinking about. But I mean, obviously, there's limits to what we were going to take from it, for obvious reasons. And somehow, moving earlier Constellation records of mine were beatless, or for the most part, lacking a lot of rhythm. And as soon as I started getting rhythm back into it, over the course of, I guess, a decade, I started really listening to hip hop again, and I'd kind of lost track with it a little bit. And then with some of the music that came out in the last 10 years, early Kendrick Lamar, obviously J Dilla, I mean, basically, J Dilla really kind of brought me back into being very interested in hip hop, and obviously the D'Angelo records, anything that Erykah Badu touches with a 10-foot pole, and all of that. And what I started to find is that the rhythms that kind of, I mean, I write a lot of my rhythms while listening to that stuff. But then I deconstruct it so that I have lots of space to be able to improvise, but just enough of the beat to make the song move forward in a way that I wasn't really able to before. And so I'm not really sure if there's so much of a direct influence or a direct, you know, I'm certainly not making hip hop.
No.
We can promise everybody that. But it's a music that I can't, there's not really music I listen to more of. I mean, I think I listen mostly to old jazz ballads, jazz singers, and hip hop. That's, you know, R&B. Kind of my staple.
We listened to your latest Say Laura in the office last week, and a young person came in and handed us a CD. Her name is Rennie B. She's a young R&B artist from Montreal. And we put it on next, and the two made so much sense together.
What's her name?
Rennie B. R-E-I-N-I-B.
Okay.
Venus. Right. Venus EP is, she literally just, you know, since the pandemic, there's been less of that, but a fun part of working in a community campus radio station is people literally come in and present themselves, and you know, it's not always great, but in her case, it was great, and we really enjoyed it. But even the arrangements almost felt like they came, that they just, it was weird. We didn't expect that to happen, but we were like, these two things really fit together. So you might not be further away from R&B than you think.
I mean, R&B, I think, is even, I think that's not,
it's not hip hop.
It's definitely pretty far away from hip hop, or at least it, I mean, some of the newer material, I think, is kind of going even more directly at it beat wise.
Yeah.
But R&B, it's, I mean, the last record was very, very much written under the influence of many hours of listening to Solange.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Which I cannot stop listening to those last two records.
Great.
Beautiful things.
Text me at 2 a.m. asking if me and my man are still good. Wasn't it you that put me in the friend zone? You're gonna have to stop playing with me. If you want me, then you're gonna have to prove it, baby. Said you were cutie, but you acting really stupid lately. Don't need a nigga that's gonna get me in my feelings. I need a friend right now, so trust me, just let me go. Wanna see her colors, you don't wanna pick it up. You done mess me up, I cannot do it. Definition of what you call crazy. What was your girl's name? Mary Jean or Stacy?
Mind if I give her a call and tell her all about you?
No, I'm not jealous. I'm just trying to do the right thing. Okay, maybe just a little. Yeah, it hurts to say you're laughing with a girl. That's on me. Said you love me, but you'll see. What does that even mean? Love is blind, so you can see that we were meant to be. But you say it too, but you're just holding back. Please don't take it over, let's just face the facts. Attraction is real, but he's my bestie. He's only committed and he's my bestie. It's complicated. No, we want it.
Say and line you up, line you up. And how long it lasts. One whole moon, two palm trees. Who's everyone? The future of feeling. Say. The difference between one and two is a dream. Light it up, light it up. Light it up, light it up. If you wanted love, I wanted to remain in love with us.
This up, I had some Toronto questions.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you about, so I lived in Toronto 98, 99, and mm-hmm. I often saw you play in a trio called with Gennaro Flock and Chenault. And
oh yeah,
I wanted to ask about. I loved it. I saw it many times. It was
that's crazy.
Drums,
God,
guitar,
about that
and
trio.
Synthesizer.
A long time ago.
I asked around and people were kind of scratched their heads, but you do remember it. It did exist.
Yeah.
I didn't make that up.
No, you didn't.
Okay. Was there ever recordings? Did that?
There must have been. Mike is a very good archivist, uh-huh. But I have no idea. I'm sure that Mike would have recorded it somehow.
Yeah.
But that was kind of before the Toronto that era of the Toronto improv scene really kind of started to come together.
Yeah.
We were playing in weird places and
yeah, it was often pubs and you know,
yeah. It would and even some rock venues, I think, like on Spadina, there was like over a Chinese restaurant this kind of huge I remember we played there, like maybe opening for the No Neck Blues Band or something.
Uh-huh,
mildly depressing evening, I have a feeling.
Yeah, no.
Just because of the space.
Yeah,
the
no, fair enough.
Band was great.
It did. When I remember that era, you being pretty much in my mind an improviser.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
When did you make the switch to being a songwriter?
Well, before that, I was playing in a post-punk band.
Uh-huh.
And
that was Flag Camp?
Flag Camp, indeed. Yeah. So that was, you know, more or less songwriting.
Of course.
You know, give or take. And then after I was, I always wrote songs, but not necessarily for me to sing.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote songs for Michelle McAdory.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote songs for Ryan Driver to sing with his then quartet, then quintet, then sextet. But it wasn't something that I felt comfortable doing myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved writing melodies and lyrics. And then it was basically Constellation asked me to make a record of mm-hmm. me singing my own songs, and that's uh-huh. why I did it.
Huh.
And that kind of started a whole new kind of chapter in my musical practice.
Wow, good for Don and Ian to set that off.
Yeah, I was very surprised at the time. Still am surprised, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know if I would have done it, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, well, who knows what would have happened. But I'm very glad that it did because it's... it's allowed me to find a way to kind of bring somewhat disparate ideas around different musics that I love together in a way that I find incredibly satisfying.
Awesome. Before we go, I'm going to ask you to recommend a ballad that we could play on the airwaves.
Mm. All right. A ballad.
It could be anything.
It could be anything. Okay. You know what? Play Laura by Gene Lee.
Okay, you got it.
And Rand Blake.
Sounds awesome. I'll dig it up. And I just want to give you the chance if there's anything you'd like to say. The show is at the Phi Center on the 9th.
Yes.
Is there anything you'd like to say to CQT's listeners?
Come hear Cedric. He's amazing.
All right.
He would be playing before me, and I'm very, very happy that he said yes to playing that night along with me.
Awesome. I appreciate the time so much, Eric. And
oh, thank you.
Congratulations on the record. It's so beautiful. We love
very
it.
Nice
around
of
the
you to say. Thank
the you. It's been played on the airwaves, and we listen to it in the office too. So
nice.
Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
invite you here down the hall. The love that floats on a summer night that you can never
sounds, tune into CKUT 90.3 on the frequency modulation band radio. www.ckut.ca on the internet. Streaming audio, archive shows, and information.
CKUT. Bye.
MTL versus racism.
Montreal versus racism.
MTL versus racism.
A concert united against racism and discrimination.
Un concert uni contre racisme et la discrimination.
Saturday the 10th of September, 6 to 10 p.m. in Girouard Park.
Samedi le 10 septembre, 18h à 22h à Parc Girouard NDG.
Avec des performances de
Jonathan Emile,
Charlotte,
Maritza,
Remy Picasso,
Paul Carniello,
DJ Lady Oracle.
Collecte de fonds pour Résilience Montréal.
Raising money for Resilience Montreal.
Tout le monde et tous les âges sont bienvenus.
Everybody is welcome.
This is a CKUT co-presentation.